Gardening can be a lot of fun. It's a relaxing activity. But when the season starts winding down, maybe it's a little harder to get motivated to do that garden cleanup and some of the other fall chores. Larry Mueller here. And welcome to another edition of Garden Talk. Our guest today will tell us why it's a good idea to get a few things done in the garden right now and what your rewards will be for your extra effort. Melinda Myers is a Milwaukee-based garden expert, the author of more than 20 books, including a brand new one she's got out. It's called Minnesota and Wisconsin Getting Started Garden Guide. I've had a chance to go through it, and it's great. She's also the host of Melinda's Garden Moments, and we love it when she joins us. And Melinda, always a pleasure.
Always a pleasure to join you two, Larry, and chat with all the listeners, which is always a lot of fun. I, as you know, get to travel around a lot talking to gardeners, and it's always fun to run into your fans and the fans of Garden Talk. So it's great to be with you.
Well, I'm so happy to have you with us. It can be tempting to just stop paying attention to the garden right now. You know?
Well, you bet. But, you're right. You know, it's kind of like that cooler weather, and we're like, oh, I'm kind of done. And, you know, sometimes we need a little bit of motivation, because a little bit of effort now, as you mentioned, can really pay off big time, not only to end the season with beauty, but to get a jump start on next year, because as we all know, spring can come early.
Yep.
Or like last year, very late.
Very late.
Very
yeah.
little time to get ready for the season. So, you know, our lawns, the early season rains helped get a lot of them back in shape with all the work gardeners were doing with overseeding and reseeding. That little drought set them back again. So, you know, continue to cut the grass, but leave those clippings on the ground. And as the leaves are dropping, shred those and leave those on the ground, because they add organic matter and nutrients to the soil. And it's one of what I like to call a twofer. You know, you get double the benefit from one activity. So you're cutting the grass, you're dealing with the leaves instead of raking them, and you're improving the soil. So I guess it's a threefer.
It's a threefer, absolutely.
It's a threefer.
And then you talk about... Oh, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Oh, and I was going to say, as long as you can see the grass for the leaf pieces, you're fine, because that's what everybody asks. But it'll kill the grass, not if you can see the blades of grass.
Do you still recommend putting a little fertilizer on in the fall as well?
You bet. Fall is an excellent time to fertilize. If you're using a low-nitrogen, slow-release fertilizer, you can do that anytime between Halloween and Thanksgiving. And that'll really help the lawn. You want to do it before the ground freezes. And what that does is it helps it recover from the stresses of summer, prepare it for winter, and the leftover freezes in the ground and then is slowly available early spring before we'd even get out there to do any fertilizing.
What about planting at this time of the year?
You know, plants, the last thing I need is more plants, but, you know, I am a gardener, so I'm yeah. always looking for more plants. And
yeah.
now is a great time that they're on sale. The soil's nice and warm. The air's cool. It's perfect for planting trees, shrubs, and perennials. They're going to get a good start. You're nice and comfortable. And I think when we're comfortable, we do a better job of planting. And we still got a couple of good months worth of root growth, because the ground won't be frozen and those roots will have a chance to explore and get established before winter. And, you know, I used to be, when I moved here 34 years ago, I kept thinking, why would you plant in the fall, the hard winters? Well, we've had a lot of hot, dry summers that, you know what, it's easier to get your plants established in the fall, get them through. They'll still have some work getting established next summer, but they'll have a jump start on our hot summer season.
Yeah, there's all those bulbs in the fall. For you know, I mean, you get some
yeah.
nice color in spring then.
Oh, you bet. And I'm always the one that's out there when the snow's falling, finishing my planting. I don't know about you, Larry.
Yeah, but, I am.
but you know what's so cool about, for me, why I like bulbs so much is, it is, it's magical. You put them in the ground, and you don't do anything in the spring, and the weeds haven't come up, and the temperatures are cool, and it's usually not the best planting time for other plants. It's early in the season, and it's like a sign we made it through winter. The garden looks beautiful. It's kind of that, we made it through another Wisconsin winter, and now we're ready to go. And you're right. So investing that time and energy now is a huge payoff come spring.
What else have you got? A couple more points for us. What about perennials?
Oh, you bet. I'm a big fan of leaving them stand for winter. Get rid of anything that was diseased or insect infested and get that out of the landscape. Most municipalities let you throw away small quantities. You don't want to compost it in your own yard because most of us don't have a good hot compost pile. So we don't kill those insects and disease. But then leave everything else stand. You know, the seed pods of coneflowers sticking through the snow are ornamental and bring the birds in. It also increases hardiness. So if you have anything that's kind of borderline, like butterfly bushes or caryopteris or some of those salvias that maybe are struggling to get through the winter, you can leave those stand. It increases winter hardiness as well as providing some winter interest. Plus, come March, I don't know about you, but I can't wait to get out in the garden. Sometimes there's not a lot we can do at that point, so clean up, see how the garden made it through the winter, little late winter pruning. It's kind of a good thing to set the stage so you're in the first step done for that March cleanup and finish the job then.
You know, I've kind of got, we tried the straw bale gardening just with one straw bale. Oh, it went great. We had a great.
Excellent.
We had a great, and the one thing I'm kind of looking forward to is this straw bale, what's left of it, is going to be great compost.
You know, and you bring up a good point. The other thing that we can do right now, and this is what I'm going to get busy with the next month on my, you know, because I moved, I'm going to start some gardens, and I'm going to start with soil improvement. I have sandy and rocky soil, so I'm going to start conditioning some straw bales. I kind of got a late start, so I wasn't as good as you, Larry. Mm. I'm going to do some lasagna gardening so I can share that step-by-step stage, but get started now so by spring, when I'm ready to plant vegetables, a lot of that is composted. The soil's much better, like you said. If you did straw bale gardening, now you've got great compost, you know, either to spread and use and incorporate or start another raised bed garden. So soil prep this time of year is really critical.
Our guest today, Melinda Myers, and Joanne in Lac des Flambeaux is online with a question, I think. Joanne, hi, thank you for calling.
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I have a question about fertilizing or bulb improving my crocuses. How should I do that? When should I do it? And what should I use?
So these are existing crocus that are in the ground, or are you planting them this fall?
No, they've been in, I would say, maybe 3 years, 3 or 4 years. And like last spring, I did have some flowers, but not a whole lot of them. Okay. And I have not done anything to condition the bulbs, and that's what I'm wondering.
Okay. One of the good things about crocus, if the squirrels don't dig them up, they're usually pretty long-lived in the soil. Now, anytime you get poor flowering, you want to look at weather. Did we get a freeze when those crocus buds were just in a very sensitive stage? It might have been weather-related. If it seems to be going downhill, in heavy, heavy shade, crocus won't bloom. So it could be if the trees have grown or you've changed, you know, added something that cast shade, it may be time to lift and move those. If it's like you're suspecting just a nutrient deficiency, the best time to fertilize existing bulbs is in spring, just as the foliage is coming through the ground. So just, you know, using a low nitrogen slow release so you don't interfere with bloom, but yet you give them a little nudge in nitrogen will help get those bulbs growing. If they're in flower beds where you fertilize regularly, they've gotten plenty of nutrients. If they're in tree and shrub planting beds and you haven't done any fertilizing, maybe done some organic mulch, they're probably okay, but a little extra fertilizer wouldn't hurt. But you'll get the best benefit if you do it just as that those leaves of your bulbs are coming up in spring. You can also fertilize new plantings at the time of planting. It's just because it's convenient. You know, you're in there anyway working the soil, adding, again, a low-nitrogen, slow-release fertilizer. Because we don't want to promote growth in the fall. Just give them enough to get started, and then next spring it'll be available, or the bulb fertilizer type things.
Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Our guest today, Melinda Myers, Milwaukee-based garden expert and the author of more than 20 books, including the brand-new Minnesota and Wisconsin Getting Started Garden Guide. I'm Larry Mueller. Judith Sears-Poisson, our producer on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. You are listening to Garden Talk here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here. We're in our fall membership drive, and your support, really, it's the foundation of our budget. It's what makes Wisconsin Public Radio your go-to place for great programs. And we'll get back to Melinda Myers in a few minutes. But first, Judith Sears-Poisson with me now in the studio to help make the case for you to go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. Please do it right now to make your gift in support of the programs you count on. And Judith, we have a goal.
We have a goal. Our goal this hour is to get 55 pledges. And we've gotten two so far, one of whom is a new pledger. So thank you so much. Help us meet this goal by making a contribution right now. You can go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. The programs you enjoy, like The Larry Mueller Show, Garden Talk, will be here every day on Wisconsin Public Radio thanks to your support.
You enjoy listening to Wisconsin Public Radio, I think in part because we're commercial-free, and commercial-free means we depend on other sources of funding. State, federal, corporate fundings, those are all important, Judith.
But the single largest piece of that tasty budget pie comes from you, the listeners. Your support makes a difference. It's the backbone of our funding. So make your pledge now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You give to WPR to support the programs. And as an added incentive, we have something pretty special right now. It's Melinda Myers' book, Minnesota and Wisconsin Getting Started Garden Guide. It's yours when you give $150 or more. That's $12.50 a month. You can ask for it right now when you make your pledge at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And Larry, that book is hot off the presses. This is a brand new book, so it's really exciting. You know, maybe you remember listening to WPR as a child, or maybe your kids really enjoy certain programs.
And I'm telling you what, you're going to really enjoy this book, and you're going to enjoy this program as you continue to pledge your support to Wisconsin Public Radio. Give us a call right now at 888-202-2552 or go online to WPR.org.
You know, Wisconsin Public Radio listeners become Wisconsin Public Radio contributors for a variety of reasons. One of the main reasons is they want to make a difference. Giving to Wisconsin Public Radio is one way to make a difference and help your local community.
Your pledge today not only pays for the programs you listen to, but it also gives others the chance to discover WPR. Make that difference with just $5 a month or whatever amount's comfortable for you at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
I prefer more balanced conversation. That's what took me to WPR. When I got there, I found a whole host of programming that interests me. Gardening shows, home improvement shows, humor shows, word language shows, things that just grab my interest and grab my attention. It's not just one thing. We had been giving on an annual basis for years. I didn't want this to be an annual decision, and I think that's where we decided to make the change and become sustaining members. It was a statement of values as much as a statement of financial commitment. I'm Bruce from Brookfield, Wisconsin. I enjoy being a WPR sustainer, and I think you will too.
And you can pledge at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. Larry Mueller here with Judith Sears-Poisson asking for your support of WPR during our fall membership drive. Maybe your gift is 10 or 20 bucks a month. Whatever amount you choose, that's the right amount at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
You know, you've made a habit of listening to Wisconsin Public Radio. Now make another habit, a habit of donating. It's a great habit to have, a habit you can even be proud of. You can get started with that habit today with your pledge of any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
There are a lot of ways that we could say make your pledge to Wisconsin Public Radio. You know, we can say stand up and be counted or make your voice heard or support what you love. You do all those things, and you really make a difference when you give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
We are looking for 53 more pledges in the next, about 40 minutes or so. Your gift right now helps us get there. Go to WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and you'll support the programs you count on.
Ask for Melinda Myers, Minnesota and Wisconsin Getting Started Garden Guide with your gift of $150 or more. That's $12.50 a month. Pledge now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And when you make your pledge, think about becoming a sustainer. Your sustaining membership automatically renews each year, and you'll pay your pledge in affordable monthly installments. It's really easy to set up, and it's a great way to make a lasting impact on WPR. You choose how to give and what the right amount is for you, and you can do that at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
That's the important thing. Donate right now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552. And thanks to everybody who's already contributed.
Thanks so much.
Really appreciate it. And really appreciate the fact that you are listening in as we visit with Melinda Myers, our Milwaukee-based gardening expert. She is the author of more than 20 books, including this latest book. And Melinda, maybe you could talk a little bit about your Minnesota and Wisconsin Getting Started Garden Guide. Tell us what's all in it.
Well, for those of you who have my other books, this is a new improved version. I've added lots of new plants because anytime my publisher says we need to revise and revamp, I'm like, only if we can add more plants. So one of the things I did is I had some old plants that, you know, are a little aggressive and some that have now become invasive on the old book to kind of warn you not to plant them. Well, hopefully that word's out because I took those out so I could make room for a few newer and lesser used but still tough and hardy plants, things that you can find, things that will do well and add some nice year-round interest. The chapter introductions are a good guideline on just the basics you need to know. And plants. And we decided to converge the Minnesota and Wisconsin because we had originally separated them because the first time I had Wisconsin and the Minnesota gardener said, just put a different cover. This would be Minnesota, too. And I went, no, we need to adapt. So I've incorporated both, which I think is fun because everybody when I travel thinks, Milwaukee. Now, is that in Minnesota? No, that's in Wisconsin. And so, you know, northern Wisconsin has a lot of things in common with parts of Minnesota. So it's a great way to take a look at our region in whole. I pick plants that are hardy throughout. And if there are any concerns for those of you in the north, I've made a note that you need to plant it in a protected spot. Or maybe it's one that's only for the daring. But basically, they're all good for Wisconsin and Minnesota. Some new tips, some new varieties, so some kind of things to add a little excitement to the book and update it a bit. And we contributed a lot of pictures to this one.
Dawn, I love the color photos, yeah.
Aren't they? And we, you know, we were going through the book, and I said, we've got a great photo library. And so we contributed a lot of new photos, so gave it a, you know, so you'll see some really pretty pictures as well. Right with the profile of the plants, some ideas for companion plants, what to mix together, some new cultivars to try. So really, I think it was, you know, I always say books are fun to write when they're done. Process, not so much, but when they're done, they're a lot of fun. And as Judith mentioned, hot off the press. I mean, listeners will be the first ones. They're not on the market until November. So people
wow.
that call in pledge will be the first ones to get copies of the book.
Well, and it's a wonderful book. I want to kind of reemphasize the regional advice and care. I like the companion planting and design feature that you have in there and things, new things to try. I mean, it really, frankly, it's a good book for anybody.
You know, a lot of people think, oh, I've been gardening for a while. And what I always hear people say when they take a look at these books, and this one especially, is, oh, you know, I've always wondered about that, and I never knew. And I try to pick those things that gardeners are always asking me about or challenged by to include in my books.
Melinda Myers, our guest, you can join in. We have open lines for you if you have a question about your garden. Give us a call. The number is 1-800- 642-1234. It's 1-800 642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can post on my Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. We'd love to hear from you. How'd your garden do this year? Love to hear about that. Maybe you're a new gardener and need some advice. Melinda's certainly happy to help with that. Or maybe you've got a trouble spot in your garden or your yard that you need a plant recommendation for. I bet you Melinda has some great ideas for that. Again, that number, 1-800-642-1234. Give us a call. And caller's online, so let's go to the phones. And Peter in Madison, you're up next. Thank you for calling.
Thanks.
Hi, Peter.
I have chickens, and I'm wondering, someone told me you should put your chicken manure on your garden beds in the fall. And I'm just wondering if that's a good idea and how much. And, you know, it's going to be a lot of it is going to be fresh, but it'll be aged.
You know, that's a really good point. Chicken manure is fairly high in nitrogen compared to a lot of the manure. So if you're putting fresh down, fall is a great time to do it. Okay. You know, you can, you know, easily do an inch layer and work it into the, I don't know, do you till your soil? Are you a no-till kind of gardener?
Mostly no-till.
Okay. Putting it on the surface will allow a lot of, what happens is a lot of that nitrogen will leach out. Part of it is the organic matter when you're using organic manures as well. And so that will help, you know, the earthworms and things will take it down, just like I'm assuming your plant debris and others. And so putting it down in the fall is a good time. The aged manure is not a problem. More won't hurt anything. Fresh manure is what we really worry about, giving it too much nitrogen. Once it's composted and broken down, the manure is pretty small quantity. So, you know, if you're just adding a layer, you know, I don't know, and I'd start with an inch and see. You could always top dress with the aged manure during the growing season, too, once it's aged, because it is a low-nitrogen, slow-release fertilizer. I would start there. Honestly, I haven't used chicken manure myself and don't have the easy access that you do. So I don't know. Do you need to get rid of more than an inch thick over all your gardens, or is that going to more than take care of your supply?
I can put a layer on our compost, too. I've got a few options, too.
Okay.
I was thinking back to years ago when I rented a house with another guy. This is in my single days. It was out in the country on a farm, and we asked to have a garden put in, if we could have a garden, and the owner was great. Mabel said, well, sure. And she said, you know, there was a chicken coop and a chicken yard right here. Let's just put your garden right where that chicken yard was. And I said, well, that'd be really good. You cannot believe the plants we had that first year, all that nitrogen that had been sitting in the soil for a long, long time. It was really great. It was
so
great.
Excellent.
Thanks, Peter, for calling. Robin in Milwaukee, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I recently moved to an apartment, and I dug up the first little part of grass and made a raised bed. I have my eye on another section of grass, and I would like to know whether what I'm thinking of doing is layering, like lasagna, putting cardboard down and then leaves and soil and manure and kind of piling it up. I'm wondering if it's best to do it this fall, or if I can push it till very early in the spring and get the same results. I have to add one quick side note. I did both in my old house. I dug a garden over and added enrichment, and I also just layered. And the size of the earthworms in the layered lasagna were like mobile hot dogs. I got much better results without digging the soil.
You know, exactly, because you've already got that soil. And if your grass is in decent shape, that means your soil below is probably in decent shape. And the benefit of the lasagna gardening is you're not digging and then bringing in topsoil that may be worse than what you're dealing with. And so you're right, if you can build that compost on top. The benefit of doing it now or sometime this fall is you just get a jump start on the season. But if you can get out there early in the spring, that will work just as well. I mean, if you look at Pat Lanza's book on lasagna gardening, she really talks about both options. You know, she said, oh, the fall, gives you just, things will be more composted. But, you know, early spring is an easier time for you. I would do that.
Yep. Okay, well, I'm trying not to get evicted because I just moved in.
Okay, there's another good point.
One other quick question. Have you heard of rock dust?
Yes. Used mainly a lot of organic gardeners, and I think it's a source of phosphorus, if I'm remembering correctly. Is that
a number of minerals and things?
Right.
I read about it on Kitchen Gardeners International, and I was wondering if you had any experience with it.
I have not. And I don't know if any of your upcoming guests, Larry, have used it. I know it's something that's more common with organic gardeners. And here's one of the things to keep in mind, and this is just something for you as you're evaluating fertilizers and nutrients. A lot of when you start with an organic product, part of the benefit is the microorganisms break it down, and so it's the action of the microorganisms because they secrete glue that helps with aggregation, so you get the kind of clumps you want, not clods. But a lot of times, some of those nutrients, it takes a long time for some of those materials to be available for the plants. I'm not, honestly, I don't know the rock dust. I don't know if you've had any experience, Larry, or any of your guests have.
I haven't, and I don't think we've even discussed it on the show. I'm trying to remember. I don't think so. Judith's here, and she's shaking her head no, too.
No,
you know,
okay.
Go ahead, Melinda. I'm sorry. We're so excited to talk about it. One of the things, and anybody who's written me knows you've got to be patient with me, but it is going into my slower time. I'm going to see if I can do a little hunting, and you know what? Judith, I'm going to put Judith on the spot to give me a nudge because I'll do a little hunting, see what I can find, maybe find a good resource for you guys to have a guess, but I'll see what I can hunt out to get it to Judith and Larry so they can post it on Larry's
sure.
page by find everything.
Yeah. All right.
All right. Thank you very much for your time.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling.
Yeah, thanks for the question.
And Janice in Grafton, hi, what's on your mind?
I mentioned that about my impatience is the first year that somebody has been eating them, and they're about half gone. They're on the east side of the house. They got plenty of, you know, light and sun and shade, which is, of course, crucial. What could have been eating them?
Yeah, rabbits really like them, so that's one option. And if you haven't had that problem, it may be that sometimes animals, when they feed, they move in different areas in the general area but may feed on different things. Perhaps a neighbor had something they preferred and they didn't plant it this year, so they found your impatience. Or maybe the babies were prolific and they are spreading out looking for things to eat. When you're looking, you may want to, sometimes if you do netting initially with a planting, if the damage occurs earlier, fencing, that can keep them away, and then you can sometimes lift that off so it looks better. If you use scare tactics, you're going to want to bury them. Repellents you can use as well. Some people use cayenne pepper. Messina Animal Stopper is made from herbs. It's all natural, and it smells good, so it doesn't repel you as well as the animals. but, you know, which I find some of the repellents, there are a lot of good repellents out there, but some of them are really stinky. So you might want to try something like that. But I do see rabbits occasionally nibbling on ground. If you have groundhogs or woodchucks in the area, they love them.
They love them.
Yeah, and they're... They're terrible eaters. When I was living in the city, I had a woodchuck moved into the park nearby, and it started devouring all my bulbs. And that was the first time I'd had a woodchuck in my yard. And then I think it moved on or was taken care of, not by me. And so that was the only year I had a problem with it. It might be one of those things, too, that something new moved into the area. And sometimes if you can get ahead of it, so next year make a note, watch those impatiens, maybe use a repellent. Ahead of time, so often it works better because when they come and they smell it and they go somewhere else and feed, and it's easier to keep them away than break the habit.
Yep, there you go. Thanks a lot, Janice, for calling.
Good luck.
Melinda Meyer is our guest, Milwaukee-based garden guru and the author of many books, including Minnesota and Wisconsin Getting Started Garden Guide. And she's on during our Wisconsin Public Radio Fall Membership Drive. Larry Mueller here with Judith Sears-Poisson and... Here to let you know how important your support is. Your gift makes a huge difference. It's what powers WPR. I hope you'll step up and be counted as a supporter with your gift right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
That's WPR.org or 888-202-2552. Help pay for the programs you depend on, like Garden Talk. We're looking for 41 more pledges in, just a little less than the next half hour. Make your donation now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
The Ideas Network is with you all day long, whether you ride to work with us, or maybe you run errands with us, or maybe you cook dinner with us. You get interesting discussions whenever you want them, frankly, and we're always here, and you make that possible with your donation. Wisconsin Public Radio just wouldn't be what it is without your support, so I hope you'll go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552 and make your contribution.
You decide the amount of your pledge. Every single pledge is appreciated, and every pledge helps pay for the programs you love on WPR. Ask for Melinda Meyer's Minnesota and Wisconsin Getting Started Garden Guide as your thank you gift when you give $150 or more. That breaks down to just $12.50 a month at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
There aren't many radio stations that have the mission to inform, inspire, and engage their listeners, but that's ours. We do. These values are at the core of Wisconsin Public Radio.
And it's not something we do for you. It's something you do for yourself and for your community, because listener support is what makes all of this possible. So contribute now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Make your pledge even easier for yourself when you become a sustainer. You can choose a monthly amount that's right for you. Maybe it's $10 or $15 a month, and have it charged with your bank account or your credit card.
When you're a sustainer, your monthly gift will continue year after year, so your support is always current and up to date. Become a sustainer now. You can go to WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
For me, it's really a sense of a connection to the world and the world of ideas. It keeps me informed. It keeps me thinking. I can't remember the number of times that I've had conversations with people saying, oh, I heard something this morning on Wisconsin Public Radio or National Public Radio. And then it's a way of having a very interesting discussion with other people about some of those ideas. And so I think that it keeps me informed and it keeps me thinking and is a way of engaging other people in important ideas. This is David Corey from Green Bay, Wisconsin, and Wisconsin Public Radio is my source for information in the arts, culture, politics, and the world.
I hope you will go to WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552 to make your pledge of support during this fall membership drive. Larry Mueller here with Judith Sears-Poisson asking for your support of WPR. Thanks in advance for your gift. Maybe it was $10 or $15 a month or whatever amount that is right for you. Maybe it was $20 a month. But WPR.org or go to 888-202-2552 and make your pledge.
We don't expect any one or even any 100 listeners to carry the costs of this program. In fact, there's an advantage to having the bulk of our budget come from thousands of listeners just like you.
When we have a wide base of support, it makes for a more stable organization. And when you pledge, it lets us know that you value the programs you get from Wisconsin Public Radio. So join in. Become a member. You decide the amount. $5 a month, great starting place. Then pledge at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
A gift to WPR is a gift through Wisconsin Public Radio to the community. You enjoy this radio station and you're not alone. Many others do as well.
We are looking for 41 pledges in the next 20 minutes or so. Your gift right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Supports the programs you count on.
And don't forget, you can ask for Melinda Meyer's Minnesota and Wisconsin Getting Started Garden Guide with your pledge of $150 or more. That's $12.50 a month. Pledge now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And when you make your pledge, you can become a sustainer. Your sustaining membership automatically renews every year. You'll pay your pledge in affordable monthly installments. Easy to set up. Great way to make a lasting impact on WPR. You choose how to give at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
I want to read this comment because it's from someone close to where I grew up. Anna from Oak Park, Illinois says, I grew up in Wisconsin, and even though I live south of the border now, I listen to WPR online every day. Thanks for letting me stay connected to the stories and music I love. Well, thank you for that support, Anna. And you can join her by donating now at WPR.org or calling 888-202-2552.
And thanks to everybody who has already given. If you haven't, do it right now as we visit with Melinda Myers, our Milwaukee-based garden expert, the author of that Minnesota and Wisconsin Getting Started Garden Guide. Great to have her along. And thank you so much for listening in. As a matter of fact, love to have your support. And lots of callers online. There's one open line at 1-800-642-1234. But let's go to Carrie in Greenfield. Carrie, hi. Thank you for calling.
Hi. Hi, Larry. Hi, Melinda. Thanks for taking my call. I planted a redbud tree in the spring, and it was just, you know, bare branches, kind of small, maybe 5.5 feet tall. By midsummer, it had developed leaves and shoots around the bottom of the tree. I talked to a gardening person, and they told me one person actually said cut it back now, and the other one said wait till fall. Well, I did cut them back in the middle of summer, and now they've all come back. And that's my question. Do I cut them back again? Do I leave them? Do I trim them back in the spring? There doesn't seem to be much happening at the top of the tree. It's all coming at the bottom.
So you had no growth, no leaves on the branches and the stems?
No, not on the top. They're all coming off the bottom. Leaves and small branches are developing.
What you may want to check is make sure that top portion is alive. Have you tried bending the branches, checking to see if there are buds and if they're formed and they're full and they're plump, or are they all dried and shriveled or non-existent on the upper
part? There are no buds. Should I trim the entire tree down?
What I would do, if you know, you may want to cut a branch, and if that, you know, if it is brittle and dry, the top of the tree is dead, and that's why you're getting these suckers. So your options are this. You could take one of the suckers and train it into being a tree, or several if you want to go for a multi-stemmed approach, and then remove all the others, because it sounds like the top of your tree is dead, and so the new growth is coming from the roots, and that's one of the challenges with red buds is we really like to, whenever possible, get the Minnesota or Columbus, as in Columbus, Wisconsin strain. Much hardier, selected to be hardy in zone 4. The Columbus ones were collected from cuttings from Columbus, Wisconsin, home of the Red Bud Festival, on my bucket list. I've never gone, but on my bucket list. And the Minnesota strain obviously was introduced by the University of Minnesota out of the Twin Cities area. So for those looking for a new red bud, you might want to consider trying to find those strains for the future. For you, it sounds like that tree is dead. So cutting it back to the ground, selecting one or two of those suckers to train into your new tree is one option, or starting over, never a fun thought, but
no.
Another option too. So, it sounds like your tree is, the top portion is dead, and it's just trying to put out new growth at the base. Very common when we remove a tree or the top portion dies back.
There you go.
So I wish I had better news for you, but you at least have signs of growth, so you still have a shot to get a new plant going from the base.
Thanks, Carrie, for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join us at 800-642-1234. Facebook question from Patricia, who says, I asked for Allegheny pachycandra at a local nursery, but was told it was considered an invasive weed. I have two patches of it now, and they don't seem to have been invasive at all. How can I...
And I haven't heard that Allegheny pachycandra is native, actually, to parts of the United States. And I wonder if they were confusing that with the Japanese. That's interesting. I have not seen, and I'm trying to keep up on that.
Yeah.
So I don't see a lot of people carrying it, though. It's not very common. The Allegheny is the native. It's a little more open and loose. It doesn't have the glossy, shiny leaves. It's a little more informal in appearance. And so that might be one to just ask around. Sometimes, you know, with common names, you know, we all have different ideas of what a common name is. And so maybe it's one of those
See if you can find another source. I have not seen it be a problem, but I'm going to double check too. So if anyone else knows for sure, let me know. But I think it's probably just finding a source is the issue.
Chris also wondered about when it's a good time to cut down clematis or clematis. I have a dark blue or deep purple that blooms in early summer and a white one that blooms in late August.
I'm a big fan, again, of leaving things stand. And the reason I like to leave clematis stand for winter is so the birds often nest in them and the seed pods can be decorative. With clematis, if they're an early spring bloomer, very few are that survive in our area. You want to let those bloom first and then do any training. We prune clematis to control the size. And so if you have a sweet autumn clematis and you don't prune it back every year, you will have one that eats the landscape. And so I know this from experience. So the otherwise, if pruning between 6 to 12 inches back in late winter is a great time. If you really don't like the look, you can do it once they're dormant this fall. If it's an early bloomer, you'll know because it flowers just as the leaves are coming out very early in the season. Jackman clematis, sometimes will put a few blooms on early, but if you prune it back, you'll get a bigger show during the middle of the summer. So most of what we're growing are summer and fall bloomers. So anytime during the dormant season is fine to prune.
Sheila in Milwaukee. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, good morning. I'm calling to inquire about shrub roses. I had a nursery plant from, I managed an apartment building, and I planted about 6 of them about a month ago. And I'm just asking, how long do I need to water those? You know, we've been watering them daily. Do I continue to do that until the first frost?
Okay. One of the things you want to do with new plantings, and you've got it right, water is critical. So we want to water thoroughly. And then we want to keep the soil moist but not soggy because your goal is to encourage deep roots. I am going to answer your question, but I'm going to give you a lot of background first. So you definitely want to start spreading out. Every day is a lot. If you're in sandy soil and it's really hot and new plantings maybe, but start going longer between watering. And really it takes a couple of years for shrubs to get established, but really after several months, a good soaking once a week in heavier soils, even once every 10 days during cooler weather is enough, and in sandy soils twice a week, and then again going to 5 or 6 days in cooler temperatures. So since you've been watering every day, now we have to train those roots to go deeper. So, you know, water thoroughly, check it in a couple of days, and water thoroughly if needed, and then start expanding that once the ground freezes, obviously you can stop. If we have a dry spring, you're going to want to add some supplemental watering. And then during the coming summer, then, too, make sure it gets a good thorough watering by rain or irrigation once a week as needed. And that will help once established, they're much more drought tolerant. But you've got to kind of get those roots going deeper. Since you've been watering daily, they're shallow, they're staying close to the surface and not going to tolerate drought conditions quite yet.
So, little work to do there, Sheila. Thank you very much for calling. Appreciate it. I want to give Diane in Greenfield a chance. Hi, Diane.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure. What's on your mind?
Well, my son just moved into a house, and they have a well, and they have, so all of their water is softened in the house.
Mm-hmm.
And my question is it all right to use softened water on the houseplants?
You know, and I
salt in
one
there.
Of the you're exactly right. So one of the issues for some plants are more sensitive than others. Things like dracaenas, spider plants, Thai plants, prayer plants tend to be much more sensitive to the salts, the chlorine, the fluoride, and the salt in the softened water. What he may want to do is really kind of monitor, and if you start seeing any brown tips on the edges, it might be worth, if he has a dehumidifier in the basement, using that water during the summer. I used to collect mine to use on my sensitive plants in the winter. He may, if he uses a filter for drinking water, he may want to use that water instead, water from an outside faucet if that's not softened, rainwater from a rain barrel, you know, those kind of options. So you're absolutely right. The salt levels aren't harmful to people, but can be to the plants. So it's a matter of kind of monitoring and seeing how they respond, or just avoiding the risk totally and looking for another moisture source, a water source.
Okay.
Okay.
I know that was not the answer you wanted. I know. I just moved to a place with a well, and we have softened water, and I have some house plants, and I'm kind of monitoring. You're doing okay. But I really think once I get my rain barrels, you know, I didn't have to have rain barrels here, but I'm going to install some so I have water for my house plants for just that reason. Because some of them are starting to show a little bit of stress, I think, from a little benign neglect on my part and a little bit of softened water.
There you go. Thank you very much, Diane, for calling. Appreciate your call. And, you know, I also appreciate Judith Sears-Poisson, who joined me in the studio.
I'm blushing.
During our fall membership drive. You count on WPR for great discussions, and it's your gift, any amount that makes these discussions possible. So I hope you'll give now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Are we making progress?
We're making progress, but we're still looking to get 32 pledges in the next 10 minutes. We can do it, but only with your help. Your pledge right now helps keep this program going strong. Make your contribution, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Every week you hear from a different guest expert about one of your favorite pastimes, which is gardening. Some guests are horticulture professors who can answer a wide variety of general questions.
And then there are others who specialize in lawns or trees or vegetables or native plants and a whole lot more. Support this program where you get so much gardening information all year long. And if you're a master gardener, you even get continuing education credits for listening. Support it with your pledge, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And certainly one of our most popular guests is Melinda Myers, and you can get her book, her new book, Minnesota and Wisconsin Getting Started Garden Guide, when you make a contribution of $150. That's $12.50 a month. Your donation supports the programs you count on, and you can also get this nice thank you gift. So I hope you'll pledge now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And you know, people ask all the time, could Larry possibly be as nice a guy as he sounds on the radio? And I always say, no, actually, that's not true. And they look shocked. And I say, because he's even nicer. Larry is such a great guy, and not just a great guy, a smart guy, an enthusiastic guy. And he's so curious about so many things. And that's what makes him such a great WPR host. You don't get hosts like Larry just anywhere. And you don't get programs like the Larry Mueller Show and also Garden Talk anywhere else either. Make this show possible. Pledge by pledge, we get there, but with listener support is the only way that we keep WPR going. Show your support right now, not just for Larry, not just for Garden Talk, but for WPR as a whole at WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
You know what I'm curious about right now?
What are you curious about?
I'm curious about which of our listeners, our 30 listeners, are going to be the ones to call and take us over the top here in the next 5 minutes.
I am too.
If you've already given, thank you so much. If you haven't, help us stay on track by making your contribution right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
I like to listen to WPR because it informs me, enriches me, and also kind of challenges me. It's just wonderful. I listen the minute I wake up on the way to work, when the work day is done, in the evening, and we even have the radio on for our pets during the day. I became a sustaining member, first of all, because of the convenience. It helps me be a part of WPR in a significant way because it's ongoing. It's a way to keep the mission going, and my small part, I think, plays a part in that. I'm David from Stevens Point, Wisconsin. I encourage you to join me in sustaining Wisconsin Public Radio.
I hope you'll make your donation in support of the programs that you count on at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Larry Mueller here with Judith Sears-Poisson asking for your gift to listener-supported Wisconsin Public Radio during our fall membership drive. and maybe it's $5 a month, or maybe we have some people who give $100 a month. Anything above, below, or in between, whatever the amount, we appreciate your gift.
And new members are especially important to Wisconsin Public Radio. A big thank you to all the first-time donors who have pledged so far. And I'm really happy to say, Larry, that we've had 16 new donors just this hour, which is so great. The more people who support WPR, the more stable our finances, and the better we're able to deal with economic ups and downs.
So, if you've never given before, know that your new membership will help keep Wisconsin Public Radio the strong, reliable station that you count on and depend on. You decide the amount, for example, $5 a month. I think that's what I did the first time. I was about 60 bucks is what I contributed. But then I've increased over time. You may do that too. But I'll tell you what, whatever the amount, give right now at WPR.org. Or at 888-202-2552.
We're still looking for 24 more pledges in the next 5 minutes or so. Help us make that goal. Maybe you donated a few years ago and you feel like you've done your part, but you enjoy listening to WPR day after day, month after month, year after year. It's your continued support that keeps this organization strong.
Or maybe it's been a while since you last donated. This is a perfect time to rejoin at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. We'll be glad to have you back.
We will. And we are looking for 24 more pledges in the next 5 minutes. Your gift right now helps us get there. WPR.org or 888-202-2552, and you'll know that you're supporting the programs you count on.
Ask for Melinda Meyer's Minnesota and Wisconsin Getting Started Garden Guide with your pledge that you need to pledge $150 or more. That's $12.50 a month.
Beautiful book.
Yeah, pledge now at WPR.org. Or at 888-202-2552.
And when you make your pledge, think about becoming a sustainer. Your sustaining membership automatically renews each year, and you'll pay your pledge in affordable monthly installments. It's so easy to set up, and it's such a great way to make a lasting impact on WPR. You choose how to give and the right amount for you, and then do it. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Simon from Madison made a pledge and said, WPR is such a huge part of my life. I'm grateful for the opportunity to contribute. Well, Simon, we're grateful that you've taken the opportunity to contribute. What about you? If you haven't contributed, do it right now at WPR.org or call 888-202-2552.
And Nancy from Pleasant Prairie pledged and said, I listen to public radio for music, news, and interesting information. I also enjoy the book reviews, local news, and ideas for things to do. Well, thank you, Nancy. And if you agree with Nancy that WPR provides you with a wealth of information and insights into our state and into the world, call now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You can still make our goal with your help. Pledge now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Once more, that's WPR.org or phone 888-202-2552. And thank you so much for your support. It's a lot of fun to get out in the garden, isn't it? And dig in the dirt. And even though the season is winding down, there are still a few things to get done for a healthy garden. Hi, Larry Mueller here. Friday means garden talk. Very pleased to have Melinda Myers with us today. Melinda is a Milwaukee-based garden expert, the author of more than 20 books, including the brand new Minnesota and Wisconsin Getting Started Garden Guide. She's also the host of Melinda's Garden Moments, and we are happy to have her with us today. Melinda, thank you for spending time with us. Really appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Always a lot of fun, Larry.
We have callers. We have questions, lots of questions here. If you have a question for Melinda and want to call it in, give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. We'd love to hear from you. We have an email from Ann in Madison who said, this year, a flame honeysuckle vine and sweet autumn clematis, white, the small blooms, midsummer, got a mildew fungus due to all the wet weather. Should she cut it to the ground? She's never had the trouble before with these plants.
Yeah, especially the flame honeysuckle, a very common problem. We see a fair amount of mildew on honeysuckle vine, usually not so much on sweet autumn clematis, but She's absolutely right. The weather was great for both of for powdery mildew disease. And so sometimes just raking and get rid of the leaves will help reduce the source of the infection for next year, and that's often enough. I would only prune as needed. As I mentioned earlier, sweet autumn clematis, vigorous grower, so we usually need to prune that to contain the growth somewhat. With the flame honeysuckle, it will tolerate severe pruning, but really if it's not overgrown, there's no reason to do any pruning. She's right, though. Improving the light penetration and air circulation with proper pruning does help reduce the risk of mildew. So if things are overgrown, that will help reduce the risk. But it's probably more relevant to the type of plant and the weather this year. So let the plant size and the growing conditions be your guide as to whether you need to prune.
Okay. We had a Facebook question from Chris. I put packaged cow manure a few years ago, put it in my old rhubarb bed. The manure was worked into the soil. The rhubarb acted like it was totally fried, never returned to the great patch that it was. But I noticed maybe 15 feet away in a wooded area that a young walnut tree was growing. Could this affect rhubarb?
Yeah. And good observation. Sometimes we do something in the garden and we think that's the action that caused the results until we step back and look a little farther or and evaluate the growing conditions. So absolutely right. You may want to dig and divide that rhubarb and take a chunk further away. Black walnuts, obviously the largest concentration is within 50 feet of the trunk, but I have followed black walnut roots for several hundred feet on mature black walnuts, and you can see when they move through a garden and susceptible plants come in contact with those roots or the leaf litter or the nuts. So good observation probably is the black walnut. If you Google black walnut toxicity or do an internet search on black walnut toxicity, there are three sites that usually come up. Morton Arboretum has a nice site that talks about variety of trees, and Morton Arboretum's in the Chicago area. Ohio State University has a pretty extensive list. Purdue and I think Cornell even. So what I usually do, I can't remember, is usually check those out when I'm doing a plan near a black walnut. And then if I want to try something that's not listed, because there's no 100% coverage on all the plants, I'll usually try one or two of the plants in an area, see how they do. If they're doing great, then I add that to my list and then try more. So that might be something for those of you struggling with black walnut trees to keep in mind. But yeah, I would move a chunk of that rhubarb and see if you can get it away from the black walnut, and that should definitely help.
Phyllis in Pembine, Wisconsin, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hello.
How can we help?
I have a lot of Siberian iris, and when I divide them or move them, they don't bloom again for years.
Okay.
What am I doing wrong?
A couple of things to keep in mind. Siberian iris are shade tolerant, but when we put things in heavy shade, it takes a lot longer for them to grow. They're slower to grow and reach maturity. So if you're pushing them in their shade limit, that's one option. Also, the bigger the clump we take, the sooner they'll bloom. So if you take a large clump and divide it in fourths instead of eighths, those pieces are going to bloom earlier than the smaller pieces. Now, it may mean, it sounds like you have a good green thumb, it may mean you have to divide them again sooner. And Siberian iris will tell you when they need to be divided. The center usually dies out, so it looks like a donut. So it's an easy clue that it's time to lift. Compost that center part, it's done, and then divide the remaining portion. So try using a larger piece, and then avoid over-fertilizing with nitrogen fertilizer. Too much nitrogen can delay or eliminate bloom. So you want to kind of find that nice level of enough nutrients to grow, but not too much that you don't get bloom.
Thanks, Phyllis, for calling. Julia in Mequon, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hello, this is Julia from Mequon. I have a question for Melinda. How to get rid of Creeping Charlie, it's affecting all the areas around the evergreens, including the white pines, northern pines, and evergreens,
yeah.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And this, I'm glad you mentioned where it was growing, because creeping Charlie in the lawn can be handled differently than in a flower bed. So you do not want to use broadleaf weed killers in planting beds, because you can damage those plants that you're trying to grow when you're trying to kill the creeping Charlie. If you don't mind using a total vegetation killer, something like a Roundup, wiping it on the leaves of the creeping Charlie, it's absorbed through the leaves and goes through the roots. Once it hits the soil, it breaks into its basic elements, and it's not harmful to your good plants. It has to touch the trunk of young trees, the leaves. Any green stems can be damaged, but really it's absorbed through the leaves and then taken into the roots. So if you can get out there with a foam brush, one gardener told me about the tongs of death he and his neighbor invented. They took long tongs, put sponges on the end, dipped it in the Roundup at the recommended rate, and then wiped it on the leaves so you could reach down and get further. So the key is getting it on the creeping Charlie, but not on your good plants. Mm-hmm. And it may take a couple applications because you may miss some. The seeds are going to germinate, so make sure you mulch that area. That will help reduce the seeds that have been lying in the ground from sprouting and germinating. And that's going to give you good control in a planting bed where you can be very specific in applying it.
Thanks, Julia, for calling. Bevan Livingston, thank you for calling. Hi. Appreciate your call. Well, let's see. First, I have to get you on. There. Now I think I've got you on. Hi, Bev.
Okay, thank you. Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Over the summer, well, this past spring, I was given an Easter lily, and when it was done blooming, I put it outside just to see what would happen, and the leaves died down. And then I saw three little shoots come up off of that plant, and so I left it in the same pot, kept taking care of it, had plenty of sunlight, and it just kept growing and growing. It's really healthy now, but I'm wondering, do I leave it out? Do I put it in the ground? Do I need to bring it in? I don't want to lose it, so how do I take care of it?
Great question. And a lot of us have had good luck. My grandma was in Ohio, but I know a lot of Wisconsin gardeners always have the Easter lily garden. We all give her Easter lilies. She plants them outside, and they usually bloom in the summer when they're not forced to bloom in a greenhouse. So a couple options. If you have a protected, sunny, well-drained spot, you can plant them. And then when the top kills, it dies back after the ground freezes. If you want to give it a little added insulation, throw some evergreen boughs, like from your, if you get a Christmas tree or your neighbors have a live Christmas tree, cut a few branches, cover that frozen ground to keep it chilled but insulated. Then they'll start to grow. You'll need to protect it from rabbits and deer if those are issues in your landscape, because they love lilies. And then they'll be pretty tall in the garden because they won't be treated with a growth regulator, and you'll get blooms in the summer. The other option is to bring it inside, give it a chill, just like the greenhouse growers do. So you could let the top be killed by a light frost, bring it inside, put it in a refrigerator, maybe leave it in a container in an unheated garage, but insulate it so it doesn't freeze. And then you can bring it out of cold storage and have it bloom. Use it in a container, and that's another way to manage it. The easiest thing is in the ground, in the garden. That's kind of risky, but you probably have the option to have years of enjoying the beauty of that lily, and it will grow, setting bulblets, offsets on it, and you could be rewarded with several lilies blooming in July.
That's wonderful. Thanks, Bev. So
put it in the ground right now, then.
Pardon me?
Put it in the ground right now.
Yes, you could plant it right now, and then when nature kills the top back, that's fine. You can cut it off, but as long as it has leaves, it's putting energy in the bulb, and that's good. That will help give it a better shot at blooming for you next year.
Mm-hmm. And thanks very much for calling, Bev. Rachel in Twin Lakes, Wisconsin. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi there, it's Rochelle.
Rochelle.
I have a very old, gnarly, beautiful trumpet vine that is entwined all around an old post that supports it. It is very tall, needs some pruning. It's got all the big, long, heavy seed pods. How do I do that without hurting it? The good news is trumpet vines are very tough. I've seen them trained into small trees where the trunk cuts so big. How big is the base of
your Yes, this is exactly it.
Okay, so you have one main stem coming out, or do you have several coming out from the ground?
I have one main stem. I could easily say it's a good 10 inches in diameter, and then it begins to wind around the metal post. It's full of character.
Yeah, sounds like it.
It sounds wonderful.
It is beautiful.
Branches,
yes.
I bet. Do you have branches coming off of that main trunk?
I do.
Okay. One of the things you can do, and you're going to need to decide how daring you want to be, you know, as long as you have branches coming off of the main trunk, it will tolerate severe pruning. I've taken trumpet vines, have died back in a hard winter, down pretty low. There are probably some gardeners out there going, they've tried to kill their trumpet vine and it wouldn't die, but it's always nerve-wracking when you want to keep it right. So you can prune it back pretty severely. I would just make sure you have several branches coming off the main trunk. So if you're going to prune down, you know, to 3 feet, that you better have some side branches coming off. If you don't, then I would go leaving at least a few side branches off that main trunk. You'll probably stimulate new growth at the base as well. So you can cut it back severely. You know, mature plants, not quite as mature as yours, can go back to 2 or 3 feet above ground level. You just may want to take it gradually, just given the size of that trunk. If you go higher, you're probably doing what's happening now, where it's going back down over the pole and wrapping around. Is that what you're trying to get happening? More leaves down at the base, I'm guessing?
Yeah.
Well, actually, the branching begins about 4 feet up.
Okay, so what are you hoping to do with your pruning?
Well, it begins to overhang over a drive, and so anything tall keeps bumping into those lower branches. It just cascades over.
Okay. Yeah, what I would suggest then is take out those overly long branches. As long as you, if you're okay keeping that main trunk intact and then controlling the top, so it's almost like a small tree, you can do as much severe pruning up on the upper part as you want, and you won't hurt that plant. I'm just concerned if you take it to the ground, it would probably be okay, but you never know. So if you could just prune on the top and accomplish your goals, that'll be the safest thing to do. Otherwise, be daring, cut lower, and then just it'll come back probably, but you know, you might want to play it safe and just take out top growth and control what you need to.
I'm with you on that one, Melinda. Thank you.
Yeah.
And thank you, Rachel, for calling. I appreciate your call very much. Judith Sears-Poisson joins me. This is Wisconsin Public Radio's Fall Membership Drive. You provide the single largest piece of our budget. That's why your gift is so important. And to encourage your gift today, your pledge of any amount automatically enters you in a drawing for an iPad. So I hope you'll make your gift any amount right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. And a new goal.
Yes, last hour we heard from 49 listeners. Thank you so much for those pledges. Our goal now is to get 50 pledges. Definitely doable. Pledges like yours support the programs you count on. Thanks if you've already given. If not, be the next person to make the programs that you love possible with your gift at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
You've been enjoying this great conversation with Melinda Myers. I hope you'll take a few minutes now to make this show and all the other shows possible. Choose a gift amount that works for you, then make your pledge at WPR.org. Or call 888-202-2552.
And you can choose Melinda Myers' brand new Minnesota and Wisconsin Getting Started Garden Guide as your thank you gift for your pledge of $150 or more. That's just $12.50 a month. Your pledge will help support the programs and you'll enjoy this great book. So make your pledge now, WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Families often tell us how WPR brings them a bit closer together. I know kids and parents listen together before school and on the weekends. They use WPR as a jumping off point for conversations. Spouses get together at the end of the day and talk about the stories they've heard. Renee and I have done that many times. Actually.
And we even sometimes hear from kids, I think homeschooled kids, who call, especially on Garden Talk. We've heard from them. You know, listening to WPR can be a point of connection between you and your loved ones. Your support right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 helps keep that connection going.
Maybe you're interested in playing a larger role in supporting WPR. The 9XM Leadership Circle is a group of listeners who've contributed $1,200 or more a year to support Wisconsin Public Radio programs?
Leadership Circle members value the compelling public radio programming that so many in our communities rely on. They want to make sure it will be here today and tomorrow for all who listen. If you'd like to increase your support to WPR and join the 9XM Leadership Circle, you can do that at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And when you do that, I'll give you the secret handshake so you know how to get into the meetings.
There you go.
WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
Your call is important to us, so please leave a message after the beep.
I enjoy your programs. What I enjoy most about it is, you know, I'm born in Milwaukee. I have an urban point of view of things. When I listen to your callers calling throughout the states, I have all kinds of points of view from a rural, farm, you name it. I just like to hear the points of view through the state, and I enjoy and I learn from the other callers.
Pledge at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. Larry Mueller here with Judith Sears-Poisson asking for your support during this fall membership drive. And maybe your gift is $10 or $20 a month. Whatever amount you choose, that's the right amount at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
So I just have to share a comment that came in from one of our pledgers, Judith from Racine. That's from Racine, not Judith from Madison, which might be me. Judith from Racine made a pledge and said, "We love Larry and think he is a reincarnated golden retriever. And we also love all of WPR. We are so lucky to have this resource." Well, if you love Larry, if you maybe think he's a reincarnated golden retriever, or if you just got a laugh with Judith from Racine's comment, pledge now. We're looking for 45 more pledges. Your pledge right now helps pay for the programs you count on all year long. Thank you so much if you've already given. If you haven't, give now. WPR.org, 888-202-2552.
You and I pay for the things that are important to us. And when you think about it, WPR is probably as important to you or even more so than some of the other things you spend money on.
Life just wouldn't be as good without WPR. And WPR wouldn't be as good as it is without listener support. Your gift right now at WPR.org or 888-202-2552 pays for the programs you enjoy and rely on every day.
And when you pledge today, you will be entered in a drawing for an iPad. You could be the lucky winner when you make a pledge, any amount at WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
And while we certainly welcome your pledges, you don't have to pledge to participate. You can send a postcard with your name, address, email, and telephone number to WPR iPad Drawing, 821 University Avenue, Madison, Wisconsin, 53706. You can enter by sending a postcard or by making a pledge right now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552.
We hope that you get programs that inspire you here at Wisconsin Public Radio. They certainly inform you, programs that entertain you and engage you. You get these programs really at the touch of a button or the click of a mouse anytime you want.
And you might be wondering what makes it all possible. Well, you do. People like you who contribute to make it happen for themselves and for others.
At Wisconsin Public Radio, membership really matters. I hope you'll become a member with your pledge of $5 a month or whatever the amount that's right for you at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
Larry and I always pledge, I think, pretty much every pledge drive because not only do we love what we do, we believe in what we do. So join us. Help out now. WPR.org or 888-202-2552. And remember, as an added bonus for your pledge of any amount today, you'll be entered in a drawing for an iPad. Sustainers, don't worry. You'll be automatically entered.
I always talk myself into contributing every single
And we can't even win the iPad.
I can't win anything, and I still do it. I hope you'll also ask for Melinda Myers' Minnesota and Wisconsin Getting Started Garden Guide. with your pledge of $150 or more. That's $12.50 a month. Pledge right now at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552.
And Jill from Wausau says, I rushed in after planting a batch of allium bulbs to listen to my favorite show, Garden Talk with Larry Mueller. Added bonus, my favorite guest, Melinda Myers, is on, and I have the fabulous opportunity to get her new book and support public radio. Thanks, WPR, for having wonderful programs all day long. Well, thank you so much, Jill. We really appreciate your support. You can join Jill by calling 888-202-2552, or it's just a click away at WPR.org.
And you can also become a sustainer. You can become one right now. Set up an ongoing monthly donation from your bank account or your credit card at WPR.org or at 888-202-2552. But we're getting near the end of the program. Really, now
we
is
are.
The time. If you haven't contributed, please do it now. Go to WPR.org or call us at 888-202-2552 and make your contribution now.
And thanks so much for your support. WPR.org, 888-202-2552. And thank you.